If you read or watch the news these days, you probably think the world is falling to pieces. Trends like terrorism, climate change, and a growing population straining the planet's finite resources can easily lead you to think that our world is in crisis. But there's another story, a story that the news doesn't often report. This story is backed up by data. Wow, what an idea. And it says we're actually living in the most peaceful, abundant time in history, and things are likely to continue getting better. We offer 12 data points as to why the world is getting better and will get better still.
Over the last 30 years, the share of global population living in absolute poverty has declined from 53% to under 17%. While there is still room for improvement, especially in sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia, the quality of life in every region above has been steadily improving and will continue to do so. Over the next 20 years, we have the ability to extinguish absolute poverty on Earth.
In the last 16 years, child labor, including those working in hazardous conditions, has been reduced by more than 50%. As we head to a world of low-cost robotics, where such machines can operate far faster, far cheaper, and around the clock, the basic rationale for child labor will completely disappear, and it will drop to zero.
Guinea worm is a nasty parasite that used to affect over 3.5 million people only 30 years ago. Today, thanks to advances in medical technologies, research, and therapeutics, the parasite has almost been eradicated. In 2008, there were just 4,647 cases.
There has been a dramatic decline in the number of teen birth rates in the United States since 1950. At its peak, 89.1 out of 1,000 teenage women were giving birth. Today, that has dropped to under 29 out of 1,000.
Western Europe used to be a very dangerous place to live. Over the last 700 plus years, the number of homicides per 100,000 people has decreased to almost zero. It is important to look back this far, 700 years, because we humans lose perspective and tend to romanticize the past, but forget how violent life truly was in the Middle Ages, or even just a couple of hundred years ago. We have made dramatic and positive changes. On an evolutionary timescale, 700 years is nothing, and our progress as a species is impressive.
We've made significant progress in reducing violent crimes in the United States in the last 50 years. As recently as the early 80s and mid-90s, there were over 50 violent crimes per 1,000 individuals. Recently, this number has dropped threefold to 15 victims per 1,000 people.
With the decision of Saudi Arabia to allow women to vote starting in 2015, women can now vote in every country in the world, with the exception of Brunei, which does not allow voting by anyone.
The polio vaccine has nearly wiped out the disease worldwide. In the 64 years since Jonas Salk developed the first polio vaccine, many countries have made concerted efforts to get people vaccinated. China saw its last cases in the mid-1990s, and India about 20 years later. In 2016, there were fewer than 40 new cases logged worldwide. Currently, just three countries on Earth have yet to eradicate polio.
Greater numbers of sewer connections and water treatment plants are helping to clean up the world. Over the last 25 years, the percentage of people relying on unsafe sanitation has fallen from 57% to 33%.
Life in Africa is getting better. The average lifespan for women in sub-Saharan Africa has increased by 16 years since 1960, from 41 to 57 years of age. 7 of the world's top 10 fastest growing economies are in Africa. The percentage of children in Africa who are in school has almost doubled since 1970.
The percentage of the population in developing countries that has an inadequate caloric intake has declined 58% in the last 25 years. Globally, 18.6% of the population was undernourished in 1991. By 2015, it dropped to 10.8%.
Many people don't believe it's possible to end persistent global problems we're facing. However, looking at history, we can see many examples where creative ideas and new tools have unlocked resources that previously seemed scarce. We need social change and policy solutions as much as we need technology solutions. But as we have seen time and time again, powerful tools in the hands of innovative changemakers can make the seemingly impossible possible.
My psychiatrist friend reports a dramatic increase in his patients' levels of anxiety since the recent presidential election. Conversations with a longtime close friend have become one-sided rants against the current president, the people who elected him, and all things related. It seems this has become her whole life. I don't disagree with the substance of my friend's rants. I don't want to turn a blind eye to the problems of the world, or the nation, or our city, or of my own life. But I know if I'm to be even a small force for healing in the world, I can't follow my friend's lead and succumb to immobilizing despair. I have to exercise my hope muscle. It has been shocking to learn that Charlie Rose and Al Franken, men I've greatly admired, are part of that crowd of powerful men who have, for decades, sexually misused and humiliated less powerful women. Disheartening as it is, though, I find hope in this recent turn of events, hope that these men's broken careers offer a wake-up call to others of their ilk, hope that the abused are now enabled to come forth, hope that we'll raise our sons to see their colleagues and acquaintances not as sex objects, but as true equals. Hope that we'll raise our daughters to know the power of speaking truth, to know that justice awaits potential abusers, to know that their bodies are their own. In Soul of the Narrator, an anthology of poetry and prose by Sacramento writers, Deborah Meltvet tells of another source of hope. Eclipse 2017, The Big Dipper. My cat drops kibble in the shape of constellations. In the kitchen, you need to be careful not to step on crunchy stars. In his first life of nine, before we claimed him, someone kicked our cat in the jaw and sent him flying. The foster cat for free became the $900 aftermath of annual teeth cleaning and tooth extraction. To eat, he starts with a mouthful of dry food but loses half the battle. But in violence, stars were born. And a 12-pound pack of fur and bone and very few teeth somehow gives me hope in a world of angry boots, gives me hope when I read about the darkest corners of humans carrying torches that can never give light. And I realize that even the smallest of critters can survive hatred and even make one laugh when I look down and see the sky on the most ordinary of earthly floors. In a world of torches that don't give light, Ms. Melvet's survivor cat is a reminder that hope and joy are stronger than hate. Hope is the fuel that moves us forward. Let's keep filling our tanks.
So one of the things that ministers hear from other ministers or people that are evaluating ministers is that ministers preach the sermon that they need to hear. Sometimes I think that's true. And I think that this is one of those times. I need a sermon about hope today. I'm feeling particularly stuck. I think it's maybe an overdose of Facebook, New York Times, and Washington Post, feeling oppressed, feeling powerless. I get too many calls to action in my email, too many calls for me to really know where I should be putting my energy, and it's all very overwhelming. So in walks Joanna Macy, a favorite of mine for many, many years. She's a Buddhist. Deep ecology is her specialty. She's been an activist for eco-justice for many years. In the 70s and 80s, she had a program called Despair and Empowerment in the Nuclear Age. So just replace nuclear age with whatever, despair and empowerment in the hell that our country has become. One of her books was World as Lover, World as Self, a real favorite of mine. But now we have Active Hope. It's the perfect book at the right time. So here's why this book caught my attention. This is her definition of active hope. Active hope, identifying the outcomes that we hope for and then playing an active role in bringing them about. We don't wait until we're sure of success. We don't limit our choices to outcomes that seem likely. Instead, we focus on what we are deeply longing for and then proceed to take determined steps in that direction. What spoke to me in that definition is that we identify and focus on what we are deeply longing for. That felt like an opening to me that I could step into. And what also caught my attention was this image. Joanna Macy calls this the spiral of the work that reconnects. And the book explores the stages of this spiral in quite detail. I'm just going to be able to share a few of her reflections on this image. But I want you to notice something about this image and the words. I hope you can all read the words. I'll be going over them in a minute. It made me think of our mission statement. Gratitude, honoring our pain, seeing with new eyes, they're all part of deepening our lives. And the going forth is our healing the world, be a force for healing in the world. Spiritual deepening means developing resilience and resourcefulness. And that's what Joanna Macy offers us in this book. So, of course, she starts with gratitude. That's also the root of Buddhism as well, gratitude. It's considered to be the most powerful of all emotions because it connects us with everything. Last week, we had a wonderful service here expressing our gratitude, creating our gratitude tree, and all of your little leaves hang in the case outside the Foz room if you're interested in revisiting them. Many of us have a gratitude practice where we can open our hearts and connect more deeply to the world around us. So I think we're on a good start on that gratitude as the root. I hope that you're on a good start on that. And then we move to honoring our pain. Honoring our pain. I think that's where I am stuck. I think that's the place where I am stuck. If we think of our pain as this idea of grief, I think for many of us that's a fair comment on where we are in our country, this sense of loss for what might have been, loss of momentum, whether it's really true or not. I think, and I know in my heart, there's a sense of grief at what we have lost as a country. I think it's important for all of us to have this little reality check and see, are we really honoring our pain? Macy talks about a variety of terms for this pain for the world. Pain for the world. Outrage, alarm, grief, guilt, dread, despair. Any of those words resonate in your heart? And I think it's reasonable in our world that we're holding in our feelings because in some ways they may feel overwhelming. As I sit there with my Facebook feed, I like to call it Facebook roulette. Am I going to get a kitten or am I going to get some horrible Trump story? Facebook roulette. I sit there and I get doused with this stuff and I feel my emotions coming over me. And the question is really, what is worse? Feeling the fear of the possibility of what could happen in our world, or my own fear of being overwhelmed by the despair, overwhelmed so that I'm not able to function and engage. So I offered you the breathing meditation as part of our prayer and meditation today, and breathing is a critical thing to do when your feelings come up. Instead of just saying, well, I don't have time for that right now. That's my favorite thing. I don't have time for that right now. I don't have time to be sad or angry. I don't have time for that. Take the time to just let yourself breathe into those feelings and the gift of knowing that you don't have to do anything. Just by the process of helping yourself be present with your feelings, you're helping to heal the world because you're not resisting or holding back. And it's important to remember at those times that you are not alone. You're sharing the pain of many beings in this world. For those of you that have a theist approach to your sense of divinity, I want to offer this universalist prayer that I find really lovely. As you sit and feel your feelings, you can say, there is a love holding me. There is a love holding all that I love. There is a love holding all. I rest in this love. As we move along our spiral, we turn to seeing with new eyes. When I first saw this picture and the idea of seeing with new eyes, I immediately saw the dandelion with new eyes. It's a very simple and humble plant. I think many of us are most familiar with putting weed killer on our lawn to keep it from growing. But it has a powerful ability to survive, to reproduce, to spread. Its roots, its leaves, its flowers, and its seeds all have uses, from dandelion wine to dandelion root as a medicinal, to dandelion greens as a spring tonic. It's a plant full of life and beauty. So as we look with new eyes, Joanna Macy asks us to think about having a wider sense of ourself, to broaden our perspective and look around the world. That's why I brought you the, one of the reasons I brought you those readings today. A wider sense of what's going on in the world. And as you're getting that wider sense, ask yourself, who are you? Who are you? When I was in seminary, we did this exercise where two people faced each other and one person would ask the other person, who are you? And then you'd answer, and then they'd say, who are you? And then you'd answer, and with each repetition of the question, you'd go a little deeper into your sense of who you are in this world on this day, in this moment. In this sense of seeing with new eyes, Macy also asks us to take a larger view of time. And I think that is totally critical. On the graphs that I was looking at when I put together that presentation, there were things that showed like murder rates, high and then low and then high and then low, but the downward track of the murder rates reminded me that we're just in a moment of time now where we're peaking in certain negative things in our moment in time. But if Europe can go from some huge number of murders in the Middle Ages to zero in 700 years, we need to think of a more longer view. It's very hard to do that because our media wants us to be about right now. Especially, I mean, I read the news like 3 times a day and I think I'm controlling myself. Some of you get feeds all the time. If you get the little notifications on your phone, bing, something bad has happened, bing, somebody's quit, bing, Trump has done something stupid, right? Theodore Parker was a Unitarian minister in the 18th century and it dedicated his life to abolishing slavery and never lived to see the freedom of the slaves, never lived to see it. He was a big fan of the long view. I want to share with you a quote from him. He said, I do not pretend to understand the moral universe. The arc is a long one, and my eye reaches but a little ways. I cannot calculate the curve or complete the figure by the experience of sight. but I can divine it by conscience, and from what I see, I am sure it bends towards justice. So we turn now to our going forth. In our mission statement, that would be being a force for healing in the world, going forth. And this is where we come back to this idea of discovering what you long for and daring to believe it's possible. That's an active hope. It's not wishing, but it's discovering what you long for and daring to believe it's possible. That's the kind of daring I think we really need in this world right now. So Macy suggests that for those of us who are needing a little oomph to get into that going forth, to that daring to believe it's possible, to think about figures from history who inspire you. Think about why they inspire you. What about their choices? What about their life inspires you and calls you? We all have those figures, whether they're historical figures or our own ancestors. Learn their stories more deeply. My inspiration is Harriet Tubman. She was a slave in Maryland who escaped to freedom and then went back and made it possible for 70 more people to escape, risking her life with every trip. So her impossible idea was the Underground Railroad. Those of you who are familiar with this, what happened, this historical slave freedom path, know that there actually was no railroad. It was a series of hiding places on a path. And there were a series of ways that people communicated where the hiding places were through, some people think it was hanging quilts out or songs that people would sing or signs on farmhouses where people would let someone know that they could stay there that night. And through the darkness of night, Harriet Tubman would ferry these people from house to house to house until they finally got to their freedom. An impossible idea, but she dared to believe that it could be possible. And then the Fugitive Slave Act happened that said that once a slave gets free in a free state, you can send them back. Any citizen can call out a former slave and send them back to their owner. And so her work got harder because then she had to extend the railroad to Canada. The railroad path had to extend to Canada so that they could be truly free. Now, I'm no Harriet Tubman, but I do find her story incredibly inspiring for this idea of dreaming and making the impossible possible. As we contemplate these ideas and think about our longing in our lives, daring to believe that it's possible, these challenges come up. I'm thinking of the devil and the angel on the shoulder, but Joanna Macy calls them our threshold guardians. These are the internal voices that tell us that the impossible is impossible, right? It could be your protective parent. Oh my God, you can't do that. You're going to get hurt. People are going to not like you. Bad things are going to happen. Your protective parent may be one of your threshold guardians. Or one that I can slightly relate to is the cranky cynic. I want to warn you about cynicism. It's anger and powerlessness. And if you feel cynical, you need to take it really seriously. So your inner cranky cynic may say, oh, yeah, right, like that's going to make a difference. That's a voice that I think many of us may have heard internally. The other one that I think might be common for you use is the inner intellectual. This is the threshold guardian who studied everything and knows precisely why there's no way that that idea could succeed and can tell you in detail why that is not possible. I love the language that we use sometimes when we say, let's sit down and see if we can't work this out. Why don't we sit down and see if we can work it out? So let's come back to our spiral here. The spiral of the work that reconnects. Where are you on this path? What part of this path feels good to you? What part of this path feels like a challenge to you? You may be at a different place on any given day and at any time on any given day. Joanna Macy tells us about active hope, calls us to active hope. She says, grounded in gratitude and honoring our pain for the world, we let ourselves know what we truly long for. Then we open our minds to the outcomes that we long for, letting ourselves be inspired, letting ourselves believe that it is possible. The work of this spiral is what gives us the grounding and power to tell those threshold guardians, whatever they may be, to step aside. Just give them a little love pat. Step aside. I don't need you anymore. I want to go forward. I want to follow my longing. We're not going to wait until we're sure of success or safety. We don't limit our choices to outcomes that seem likely. We will focus on what we truly long for and then proceed to take determined steps in that direction. Active hope. And as you contemplate this spiral, as you contemplate these steps, please know that you are not alone. You are joined by this community, and you are joined by the great community of those who seek a more just, loving, and sustainable world. I wish you all the best on your path. Blessed be.